Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McCabe and Junie Riddle here with you on this Friday. Michelle has the day off. We'll be back on Monday. We're looking forward to spending some time with Junie today. He's one half of Michelle and Junie. Saturdays from 9 to 11 here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. The reporter, Nick Keiser, is along for the ride as well. And the Predators, while they are not going to be making the playoffs this year, Junie, they sure made it exciting last night, as now they have one game remaining, which will be tonight at Bridgestone Arena. But Yuso Parsonen and my friend with, I believe, a goal of the year candidate to win it for the Predators in overtime. What's up, man?
Nothing much, Chase. I mean, just sitting here at home with the baby. And yeah, last night's game was something to watch. I know Minnesota was sitting out some of their starters. But I mean, still, the Preds were doing what the Preds have done since the trade deadline. The young guys stepping up, making plays again. Tommy Novak still continues to impress. He had a really good move that set up the Kiefer Sherwood goal. But the highlight of the night, I mean, the overtime goal by Yuso Parsonen between the legs, top shelf right there in the corner. I mean, it was just perfect. It was a backdoor cut. It was a perfect feed, and he just absolutely finished. And according to the stream, your cat is this.
Yeah, that's Rebel. He decided to say hi.
Rebel was trying to start some ruckus this morning on the stream. If you were watching, Chase's cat just hopped into the video camera. But it was a great game last night for the Nashville Predators. Again, you know, what we wanted to continue to see, we wanted to know if that effort level was going to be there, knowing that they got eliminated by Winnipeg's win over Minnesota on Tuesday, and it was. So it's exactly what the fans wanted to see, and, you know, just, you know, taking something to go forward into next season.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I love that they're playing for pride. That's just what you have to do at this point. Barry Trotz was on yesterday with Jared, with Stillman and company, and you'll hear a little bit of that later on, but I thought it was pretty telling. Now, Barry's not going to lay all his cards out on the table, and I've known Barry a long time. He is a good poker player when it comes to being a coach, and obviously this is different now that he's going to be a general manager. But he did say that he felt like there were three or four guys that had penciled their way into the lineup next year because of the way that they have played right now. Now, if you pull out the whiteboard, as Jared put it, and I actually did that, and you start writing down everybody that's on the team right now, let's not even factor in free agency in the offseason, there are obviously more bodies than there are spots available. So Barry's going to have his work cut out for him, you know, when it comes to evaluating veteran players. And the two names that are going to come up quite a bit are going to be Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchene. Do both of them return? Does one of them return? Are they both gone some way or the other? That is going to be a very difficult decision and process that Barry is going to have to make. But, you know, he talked about the Tommy Novaks and Luke Evangelistas and Yuso Parsonen and guys like that. And, you know, Parsonen's been one that's been hurt. Parsonen is not going anywhere. He is very much a part of this team. And that goal last night, I think, shows you why. With the skilled hands that he has. But I think the offseason is going to be really intriguing for this Predators club as they go through the process of making these moves.
Now, and I totally agree with you on Yuso Parsonen. And I mean, with his size and his skill, he has definitely got to be somebody that's in the mix. I mean, he was a young guy that kind of started the year hot with this team when he got called up. And I mean, not even to mention the goal last night kind of overshadowed the play he made earlier in the game in regulation, where he had a 2-on-1 and him and Trennan made an excellent play. You know, it looked like he was going to be the guy that had the opportunity in front of the net, but at the last second, he decided to pass it and really set up Trennan for that goal. So having a guy like that with the size and his skill level is going to be, you know, one of those players that they're going to have to fill into the lineup, knowing that he missed a bunch of time with injury. But like you said, I mean, Tommy Novak, you know, making plays, Luke Evangelista making plays, and Tomasino, and I think Barry Trotz highlighted that, and it's going to be a tall task. It kind of comes down to who's going to fit into this. And I thought his comments, because, you know, Jared asked him directly about Ryan Johansson. I thought he was pretty clear about that, you know, it was pretty underwhelming what he was doing this season, but he said, I mean, it's really up to him on whether or not that he wants to take that next step and to kind of get closer to where he was when he was earning that $8 million a year contract. So it'll be really interesting for the Predators going forward, but you know, we're going to have Sean Henry on next, and you know, something that I really want to get into him about is, has there ever been a GM that has been set up better to succeed? I mean, when you're talking about Barry Trotz coming in, I mean, he's got draft picks. He's got cap space. This team was, you know, looking to sell and had zero expectations for the end of the season. And you have all these young guys set up, and you have a lot of young talent that you have to, you know, really analyze and, you know, see who's going to be a part of the lineup next year. And I think that that's a good situation to be in, rather than, you know, having a bunch of questions about young guys and what's the direction going forward. You have the guys in-house to be able to make a quick turnaround. And so with all the draft picks and all the money they have in free agency, this is a great setup for a brand new GM to come into the situation.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you, Junie. Chase McCabe, Junie Riddle, who's in for Michelle today. I think that Barry, he probably has a master plan with a couple of different variations to it, because he could decide, you know what, let's ride this young thing, the young players, and let's trade off maybe a couple more veteran assets, see what we can do with Duchesne and Johansson, keep Saros, obviously, because he talked about Saros, like they're building around Saros, but let's bring in more younger talent and maybe take a step back and then build this thing back up. Or he can take the draft capital and what they've acquired and fill this thing back up fast and become a contender. And again, ride UC Saros, build around UC Saros and keep that window open. And I kind of wonder if that's where he's going to lean, because he can have a mix of the young talent that we've talked about that's going to be building a new core, but then, you know, hit free agency, which it's not a great free agent class. There's a couple of big names out there that are interesting. No, I don't see Toews and Kane coming to Nashville. So anyone that is throwing that out there, I don't see that happening. But I think Toews retires, and Kane, I think, actually goes back to Chicago. But I think you could make some moves there, make a few trades, go find a heavy hitter somewhere and use some of those draft picks to acquire that asset. And then all of a sudden you're back in the mix because you have a Vezina finalist goaltender. And that's how you build a team. If you have solid goaltending, and I love the line that he used, he said he's been blessed because he had Vokoun, and he's had Chris Mason, he's had Pekarinen, and then he goes to Washington, has Braden Holtby, and has good goaltending on the island, and then he comes back to UC Saros. So he's been very lucky in his career to have goaltending. And if you have solid goaltending, then you can build everything else around it. And he mentioned Josi, he mentioned Forsberg. Those guys aren't going anywhere. So, like you said, I agree with you. David Poile and management has left Barry in a very, very good spot.
And he highlighted that in his interview with Jared yesterday, was you can't go anywhere if you don't have good goaltending. You can have all the talent in the world. And I think this is something that we've seen with the Edmonton Oilers and the Toronto Maple Leafs, you know, teams that have really good offensive production, but their lack of goaltending when it comes to the Stanley Cup playoffs is something that holds teams like that back. And when you're in a situation like you are with the Nashville Predators, you have the goalie that you want locked up. It's been 3 years now. He's been consistent every year. He's been in that Vezina Trophy conversation year in and year out since he's taken over for Pekka. And I think it's really important that we let these young guys develop and really try to kind of build around what UC Saros is doing. It's just crazy how the narrative can change, because a lot of us were saying, you know, this team needs to sell. And is UC Saros in that conversation when you have an elite level goaltender down in Milwaukee? And it just kind of goes to show you that the narrative can change and that a goaltender can get hot. And then when you give these young guys an opportunity to step up, they can seize that opportunity. And you're talking about a Predators team that is set up for the future. So I'm just super excited to see what he did. He did say, and I think that's something that's key about what he said, is that you need to know your window. And when he's evaluating these guys, and as a coach that has evaluated talent in the past, it's going to be key for him to give these young guys an opportunity, mix and match those lines that John Hines, if he is still the coach next year, he's going to have to find which guys have chemistry, how to mix in the veterans with these young guys and get the most out of this team. Because, you know, a lot of people aren't expecting this team to be a playoff contender next year, but I'm sitting here looking at the production that these young guys are getting, guys like Tommy Novak that are coming out of nowhere. Luke Evangelista might be a little bit ahead of schedule and his future on whether or not he's going to stay up in the pros next year to start the season is still in question, but it's a good spot to be in. I'm really excited to see how this plays out. And it just comes down to, do they want to go out and get free agent acquisitions, or do they want to use all their draft picks just to really replenish their prospect pool? It just gives you a lot of things to really look forward to going into this offseason. The draft's going to be here locally this summer. Yeah. And with all this stuff going on, it just shows me that this rebuild might not be as much of a rebuild as it is a retool that they can take into next season and possibly really compete next year if everything falls into place.
David Poyles called it a transition, and I think that is the right word right now. That's what it is, and that can go either way. Barry Trotz can decide what way that it's going to go. And I mean, the other part of this is Bill Haslam coming in as a part of the ownership group and eventually becoming the majority owner. You know, that's certainly going to have an impact on the outlook of this team too. And I think in a positive way. So we will see. You mentioned Sean Henry. He is in the on deck circle. He's going to join us. We're up and running here on this Friday. He's Junie Riddle in for Michelle today here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. It is Chase and Michelle here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game, broadcasting live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios. Chase McCabe, Junie Riddle in for Michelle today on this Friday. And as we've done every Friday at 9:15, we say hello to the president and CEO of the Nashville Predators, Sean Henry, who is on the line with us. And Sean, I know that you probably have a bittersweet feeling today, because it all comes to an end tonight with the celebration of the fans and just an awesome year at Bridgestone Arena. The back half of a back-to-back, coming off a huge win last night against Minnesota, but it'll all wrap up tonight against the Colorado Avalanche with pregame at 6, puck drop at 7. How you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well, man. Welcome on, Uncle Junie, big chaser. It's like a family reunion today. Things are really good. Last night was fun, wasn't it? And the crowd was electric. You know, we've talked about this for a long time, the past 6 weeks or so. You know, there's just been a change in how our incredible fans relate to this team. And they really got behind some of the young guys, that next man up. It didn't matter who was injured. You know, people came out and supported it, and it was a lot of fun. And last night, the way it ended, it felt like it was a playoff game, didn't it?
It did. And that, you know, I think that is what is giving a lot of people positivity moving forward of, even though you're not making the playoffs this year, the future is very bright. And as I listened to Barry Trotz on yesterday with Jared, you know, I got that from him. I heard that in his voice and the fact that there's a lot of different ways that this can go with all the draft capital that you've acquired, 13 draft picks, including 7 in the first 90 picks in the draft that'll be held right here in Nashville at Bridgestone Arena. And then you could use that to draft for the future. You could use that to acquire assets. I mean, there's just a lot of different options that I think give people some excitement moving into the off season. But hearing Barry Trotz is just, I just grin every time knowing that he's going to be part of things again. And I know you and I have had conversations about him over the years of, even though he wasn't here anymore, it still felt he was like a part of the family. So what's it kind of been like getting to work with him hand in hand again?
Oh, it's great. You know, as you and I have talked about, and Barry has said publicly, and David has too, it was like he never left. You know, David made the joke that we loaned him to Capitals and loaned him to the Islanders, but this was always home. And, yeah, really good friends in both those organizations, and they loved having him, right? He was all in when he was there. His family moved to those cities. But he always talked about Nashville so fondly, and, hey, in Nashville we did this, and Nashville we did that. And, you know, every time he would come back or he, you know, jump in for a charity event, it was always fun to connect with him. But you always kind of knew he'd be back here in some form or fashion. So really, you know, last summer when he was passing job after job, you know, David and I just got a little bit more excited, like, hey, what if, what if, what if? And the what if became a reality, and it's so exciting. And the other, like you just said, you know, the toolbox is full. I mean, every possible thing you want for a team that just missed the playoffs for the first time in 9 years is laid out before us. You know, it's double the picks that you normally have over the next 3 or 4 years. You know, so many top round picks, you know, coming up. You have some cap flexibility. You have a really good team. You know, injuries really destroyed us this year. And we also now realize, or everyone else realizes, how deep our minor league system is and how good our young guys are. And the reason that happened is, you know, the past 2 years we haven't made a lot of trades for, you know, from our future assets for, you know, playoff pushes. And once again, this year we did just the opposite. You know, parted ways with some guys that meant a lot to the team because we knew what we had. You know, down below. Unfortunately, we were forced to play them earlier than we thought. But the exposure and experience these guys got over the past month, every game's been like a playoff game, and that's going to pay dividends for us down the road. Ideally, it pays dividends for us in Milwaukee, you know, next week when the playoffs start.
Sure.
We're speaking with Sean Henry, the president of the Nashville Predators. Sean, Tennessee has seen a couple tragedies here with the Covenant School and then the Fort Campbell accident. The Predators, in my opinion, and I think in everyone's opinion around here locally, are just thoroughly impressed with how the organization has handled these tragedies and raising money for the families and for all the individuals involved in this. Can you kind of touch on what that process has been like and how you all as an organization have responded and acted to really kind of help repair the community?
You know what? We take our role pretty seriously as bringing people together. Ideally, it's for celebrations. Ideally, it's for, you know, high-fiving a stranger, hugging a stranger, you know, seeing a band for the first time, or, you know, getting an autograph, learning to skate under Scott Hamilton. Those are the things that we just love doing. But the things that we look back on and say, wow, that was really important, is helping the community when things are bad and tough, whether it be, you know, the tornado and the pandemic and the Christmas morning bombing, you know, to the straight-line windstorms we had, you know, following that. Obviously beyond an unthinkable tragedy, but unfortunately we have to think about it because we're in front of us at a Covenant School. And then just a day or two later, you know, the tragedy accident at Fort Campbell, we see it as our responsibility, you know, to try to, you know, nurture people, coon them, bring them together, because this building is nothing more than a town hall. It's the center of our city. And we take that role pretty, you know, seriously, and our whole organization does. And unfortunately, you know, we host our first live event in Clarksville yesterday at F&M Bank Arena. You know, the first event we ever hosted wasn't the most fun one. We'll enjoy, you know, other things will be better when we're watching Austin Peay, you know, light it up on the scoreboard or concerts. Yesterday might have been the most important event we ever had with the memorial service for those, you know, 9 heroes that died in the accident. And it was something to step back and watch that whole community, realize what that building can do for the community. And I think it's one of the most important things a sports team can do. And you look at so many tragedies over history, whether they be, you know, as tragic as Covenant or economic or riots, sports has an ability to kind of squelch those and make them better and heal communities. And it's time and time and time again, whether it be the Depression in the 30s coming out of the, you know, World War II, you know, the riots in Detroit in 68, and L.A. in 91, I think it was, what rallied the community around were the Tigers winning the World Series, the Dodgers winning the World Series, you know, live baseball returning. And, you know, we have the ability to bring people together, use the Pass Our Fans out for our logo, maybe raise some money or bring attention to some needed things. So
definitely agree with you. Sports could definitely heal and bring people together. And I think that you all as an organization have done an excellent job with doing that. But my second question for you is on a little bit of a more happier note. We saw the Preds girls 19U team win a USA Hockey National Championship, something that's never been done in this region. Can you kind of touch on the importance of this victory, especially for women's hockey and for a young group of ladies winning a championship like this in this region, which has never been done before? It's really important in getting and inspiring more young ladies to play. Can you kind of touch on the impact that that's had here locally in Nashville?
Well, I don't know if I can top what you just said, but how awesome is it? I mean, it really, really is. The best part about that Junior Predators team and the organization that, you know, we work pretty hard with is it's 100% female-led, from coaching staff to the management of it. And that, to me, is even more fun to watch because you have 4-year-old, 8-year-old, 10-year-old, 18-year-old young ladies playing for coaches that look like them, that have been through what they've been through. And it gives a different perspective, not just to excel on the ice, but what's next. And I, you know, after the game, I go home, I always watch the game again on TV, and some are more enjoyable than others. But last, I rarely watch the interviews in intermission. I kind of fast forward through them normally, but you know, I watched last night, and you know, to watch our coach up there and you know, Lindsay interviewing him, and then Katie Cummings, you know, one of the star players on the team who also played for my son at Father Ryan. She scored the first high school goal by a girl ever last year or 2 years ago. To see them being interviewed on, you know, TV, you know, broadcast throughout, and them talking about what it means to them to work with this team, these girls, for quite a few years, and for them to reach the pinnacle, it's incredible. But they all have a shared story. They all started playing on cadet teams, and it wasn't until just a few years ago that, you know, we were able to, you know, form that travel group. So it's amazing to watch them come together and for the first time be in the same dressing room, not in their one by themselves, if you will. And I'm excited for what the future holds. I'm also, let's capture the moment, too. We got to celebrate these young ladies, because what they did was incredible. They were behind in every single game, every game, and they came back and won. That normally happens once or twice in a tournament. It rarely happens every single game, and I'm just so happy for them. And it was fun. I got to videotape the interview last night, and at midnight I was sending it to my daughter, who's just turned 16 years old, and she played for a long time and literally stopped playing because she didn't want to play with boys anymore. I mean, that's kind of sad. But there'll be other kids that get to play you know, with girls and excel and succeed because of that group that's showing the world that they can do it. And the future is really, really bright. Then again, this morning my daughter at 6:30 said to me, "Why would you send me a text at midnight?" So she brought me back to reality.
Sean Henry, the president and CEO, is on with us. And Sean, as you look back and celebrate this season and you know, especially the run that has happened since the trade deadline, Pekka statue, arena of the year once again, all of the things that have happened, 25 years. That's going to be on the docket to celebrate with the Nashville Predators next year, season 25, which I think is awesome. And how fitting is it that, you know, David Poile going to do his final draft here in Nashville. You know, there's going to be a lot going on with that. Barry Trotz returns. I don't think you can write the script any better, but I know that you all will have a lot of fun things planned for next season, celebrating 25 years.
Well, there's no doubt about it. You know, the draft and the awards, and you always say the awards too. Even we're the first in America to ever host them together. It's going to be one of the biggest retirement parties you've ever seen, and one of the biggest come home parties you've ever seen. And it's going to be really neat to have, you know, 32 GMs celebrate David. I mean, the impact he's had on each and every one of them, on the game as a whole, is going to be on international display, and it's so well earned and deserved. And you're right. And then we get to celebrate, you know, 25 years of the Predators and all the highs and the lows and the good points and the memories. And now you're turning the page on a, you know, new generation becoming fans that they all through their parents. It's going to be a great celebration, but we'll also be able to celebrate David all year long too, which he so deserves. You know, we're not the hockey market we are without David Poile.
Well, I look forward to the panel of GMs that can talk about being fleeced by David Poile when it comes to some trades. George McPhee can lead the way. That'll be fun. But
you know, and they will all do honestly, you know, excited about it. And they'll all laugh about, you know, "I can't believe I dealt with him a second time after that, what he did to me that first time." But it's amazing the respect all those guys have for him. And I just love being in our Board of Governor rooms when they all literally wait in line just to come over and talk to him. It's amazing. It really is.
Well, Sean, appreciate it today. One more tonight. Let's go get a dub, and we'll see you at the arena.
Appreciate it, Sean. Let's
have fun tonight. Tonight's a real fun celebration, and get out loud, get here early. We have a few things in store to surprise our fans, and it's going to be a lot of fun. It really will be. So appreciate you guys, and I guess I'll see you next week.
Absolutely. Sean Henry, the president and CEO of the Nashville Predators, joins us every Friday at 9:15. We'll get back into that Barry Trotz conversation a little bit in the 10 o'clock hour. Also talk some Grizzlies. Eric Hasseltine The radio voice of the Grizz will join us at 10:30. But up next, Anthony Richardson has penned a letter to NFL GMs. We will discuss that. Chase McCabe, Junie Riddle today here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Hey, be sure to join me in 102.5 The Game out at Nobles in East Nashville for Grind City's official Grizzlies watch party this Sunday. We're going to watch Ja Morant and the Grizz take on LeBron and the Lakers. Can't forget AD either, starting at 2 o'clock. So stop by for your chance to win concert tickets as Memphis begins their playoff run. Also, I will have a pair of opening night Predators tickets to give away, but I'll put out on social media at Chase on Game how you can win those. So come check it out at Nobles East Nashville for Grind City's official Grizzlies watch party. Looking forward to that. Chase McCabe and Junie Riddle hanging out on this Friday. Nick Kieser as well. And we'll dive into a little football here because I thought this was interesting and cool, Junie, if I'm being honest. When I was scrolling through the Twitterverse yesterday and I saw that the Players Tribune had put out basically a letter that Anthony Richardson, the quarterback, has written for the Players Tribune, but it was kind of directed towards NFL general managers and basically talking about how much football has meant to him, why he loves this game, and why he thinks he can be a franchise quarterback in the National Football League. I mean, any little bit helps, and he's gotten a lot of praise from whether it's the S2 testing or, you know, how he's done at the combine and pro days. His draft stock has certainly risen. I still think he's a polarizing figure because you might have some pundits that think, yeah, he could be special, and some going, I don't know if I would do it. So I think it's interesting that he decided to go this route. The Players Tribune has certainly been an avenue for that over the last few years, but I thought it was a cool read.
No, I thought it was definitely a good read. And for somebody who's been really low on Anthony Richardson, it kind of gave me a, you know, open door view of his personality and kind of who he is and what motivates him. I think what really stuck out to me most in this letter was, number one, his background and where he comes from, talking about how, you know, his mother struggled to put food on the table and, you know, how, you know, oftentimes that he had to, you know, outwork and it had a rough background, which you've seen a lot of successful players come from because they've had to work for every single thing that comes to them in their life. But one of the other things that really stuck out to me was talking about his uncle Tanka. I believe that's his name, Uncle Tanka. The way that he said his uncle was passionate about football and how he was a really fun guy to be around. But when it came to the sport, that he was ultra serious and that he really wanted to work and get the most out of Anthony and always try to, you know, put his confidence at the foremost and make sure that he was never doubting himself. And he ended up losing that person in his life, and says that he still plays for him to this day and that it is his goal to make it and to be something because of him. I will tell you this, Chase, when I watch this guy on film, you know, I see a lot of upside. I see a lot of raw talent, but something that just hasn't been harnessed yet. But hearing this and hearing how motivated he is, I don't know if it's really kind of starting to change my perspective on this prospect because he is so raw, but it made me feel like, man, this guy really might have the personality that wants to go and get drafted and be that guy for an organization that is, one, appreciative of the opportunity, and two, is going to make the most of it rather than kind of, you know, just rely on their talent and not put the work in that it takes to be a franchise level quarterback in the league.
Yeah, I think the personality is a lot of it. I mean, sure, you got to have the talent, but like if you get a guy that loves ball, just loves football and wants to be a part of it and really shows that, then that's contagious in your locker room in a very, very good way. And so I think GMs would definitely be intrigued by that. But, you know, you just said it, Junie. I'm like you. I have been, yeah, I would stay away. You know, I don't want to trade up to 3 if I'm the Titans and go get him, or 2 or what have you. I mean, heck, he could go number 1 overall. Who knows? I'm just very skeptical, but I do buy into the, I mean, this guy could be nothing, or he could be special. I heard Jared say it yesterday that the more, and he was talking to TD, and TD has been pro Anthony Richardson. He's been very complimentary of him. He likes his technique. Obviously he is raw. He's got to be developed, but he feels like that he in the right system would certainly get that. I mean, who knows? Who knows how this could turn out? And I think a recent example that we can use, albeit a little different, but look at Jalen Hurts. I was one of those that I didn't think he was an NFL quarterback. I thought he was a heck of a person, a heck of an athlete. I just didn't think he was going to be an NFL quarterback. What Philadelphia has done to develop him in a short amount of time, and then he leads his team to almost a Super Bowl victory, was in the MVP discussion. It looks like he very much belongs in the NFL. Now, you obviously want to see it more than once, but that's a great example of doing it right, and they didn't rush him into it. You know, if the Titans were to draft Anthony Richardson, it has to be with the idea of he's not sniffing the field this year. Ryan Tannehill's the guy. Keep Malik Willis, sign another guy as a backup, whatever. I don't care. But keep Anthony Richardson off the field and let him develop. And I'm not comparing him to Patrick Mahomes, but that is the situation. Let him sit. Let him learn, just like Andy Reid did with Mahomes that first year, and then see what you have. But I'm still skeptical, but I'm starting to come around and go, well, this might happen. Who knows?
Yeah, I definitely think that when you get a glimpse of a guy and what motivates him, that definitely has to change your perspective. But my perspective on the potential with Anthony Richardson going 3 to the Titans has still stayed the same for me personally. And that is because, you know, Colin Cowherd went on, and if Nick has this audio ready, I would like him to play it right now. But Colin Cowherd came on and he made a comment that I think fits so perfectly with the Titans situation. And after Nick plays this audio, I'm going to get into why that Anthony Richardson probably wouldn't be the best fit for the Titans if they were to trade up and get rid of those assets at number 3.
Oh, yeah. Okay, we'll get it
a little bit later. But the premise of this is this kind of makes me believe that Anthony Richardson can be a guy. I just think that he needs to go to the right situation. He needs to have a coaching staff that can develop him. He needs to have an offense that's already kind of ready to go and is just a few pieces away that you can build in an offseason. Yeah. And right now, I just don't see the Tennessee Titans as being that team. I feel like if you were to come to the Titans and the lack of receiving talent that's here, the offensive line needs a bunch of work. It's going to take a lot to really build around and get the most out of this guy. And I think you'd be setting him up for failure by getting rid of your, you know, important assets of the future that you could use to build around him. I just don't think that if you wanted to get the most out of him, that trading up to 3 would make the most sense and getting the most out of him. If he were to go to, you know, the Colts or the Raiders, that, you know, they already have, you know, solid number one receivers and offensive linemen in place to be a pretty solid offense going into next year, that would make sense. But the Titans are just not in that area to go and get a project like Anthony Richardson and expect to build around him.
Yeah, and I think everybody kind of points at the Colts as being a potential landing spot because Shane Steichen just came from Philadelphia as the offensive coordinator and was a part of that process of developing Jalen Hurts. So I think it's natural to connect those dots that maybe he could build an offense similar to the one that they ran in Philly and make it work for Anthony Richardson. But you mentioned the Colin Cowherd audio. We'll get that for you coming up next. And also, if the Titans don't go quarterback, which I'm going to be honest, I have no idea what they're going to do. If they don't go quarterback, then where do we lean at 11 right now today on April 14th? He's Junie Riddle in for Michelle today. We'll discuss that next. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Backstreet's back, all right. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McCabe, Junie Riddle. Nick Kieser bringing it on a Friday. Let's go. Getting everybody excited. I hope you're having a fantastic day. That got me going. That was funny. Join us for our Preds pregame party tonight at the Superbook Lounge and Landshark Bar and Grill, Margaritaville on Broadway. Place your bets with Superbook and enjoy great food and drink specials. Plus, enter for a chance to win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Preds home game, which will obviously be next season. But that'll be going on today. Looking forward to that. Chase McCabe, Junie Riddle, who's in for Michelle today, talking about quarterbacks and what the Titans could do with their pick at 11 if they decide to stay there. But I know that you wanted to reference something that Colin Cowherd had said when it comes to the Titans and the quarterbacks and the situation that they're in.
Six teams are considering moving up in the NFL draft to the number three spot. That's Arizona. Okay, and they're not moving up for an edge rusher. They're moving up for a quarterback. So the closer you get to the draft, teams fall in love with a quarterback's upside. We saw it with Philadelphia and Carson Wentz and Washington and RG3. And the Packers moved up for Jordan Love's athleticism. And Trey Lance of the Niners, they move up. And it works, Josh Rosen, Arizona. It works just enough, Mahomes, Chiefs, Josh Allen, Bills, Lamar Jackson, Ravens, the teams they'll keep trying. But the truth is it doesn't really work ever unless you have things in place.
That was Colin Cowherd, and you can hear him weekdays at 11 on 94.9 The Fan as a part of our lineup there. But So expand on this, Junie. I know you had a point that you wanted to make with it.
So I was doing some digging about teams that have traded up for their quarterback, and it seems to be in the modern era, starting in the 1970s, that there has been 29 teams that have traded up to go and get their guy in the first round. And out of those 29 times, only four of them have actually worked. And the four that have actually worked have been Joe Flacco in 2008. The Ravens got a Super Bowl out of that. The Ravens did it again in 2018 when they went up and got Lamar Jackson. He gave them an MVP, and he's been a pretty solid quarterback for them. And then in 17, when the Chiefs went up to get Mahomes, and in 18, when the Bills went up and got Josh Allen. Every other situation, it has not panned out for the best. And when I look at those four situations, I sit here and I wonder to myself, well, what was different about those teams? And when I look at the 08 Ravens, you know, the Steve McNair stuff had went down. They were in a bit of a limbo, but they had a really good roster to set up. And then Joe Flacco gets drafted there, and they go straight to the AFC Championship, three AFC Championships in the first 5 years of his career, and they get a Super Bowl out of it. You know, the Bills, they had made the playoffs the year prior to drafting Josh Allen, and they were competitive against that really good 2017 Jacksonville Jaguars team. The Ravens, they were still really good with Joe Flacco in company. They always have a good defense. They always have a good run game, and they just were looking for, you know, a transitional piece like Lamar, and they ended up working out because they had a good roster. Patrick Mahomes, he's with Andy Reid, an offensive genius, and on top of that, you give him Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill. I mean, what better situation could you go into? And they were the number two seed in the AFC beforehand. So when I'm hearing all this buzz about the Titans and trading up to go get a guy like an Anthony Richardson, I'm asking why. Like, yes, I'm starting to come to grips that maybe Anthony Richardson might pan out as a quarterback. But I think that he would only pan out as a quarterback if he goes to the right offensive system with the right coach that can develop him and actually having pieces in that offense that can get the most out of him. And for me personally, when I look at the Titans, you can argue that they have one of the worst receiving corps in the league. They have patched up the offensive linemen with guys that don't have a history of being starters. They've been kind of fill-in, plug-and-play guys, and they're looking for their first real opportunity to be the main guy on the line. So with all that being said, I just don't understand this narrative and why so many people think that the Tennessee Titans are going to trade up and take a flyer on a really raw, unrefined prospect like Anthony Richardson when they have so much other places to build around in order to make a young quarterback coming in to be successful.
Yeah, I agree with you, Junie, because I think that this team, like you said, they have too many holes. And the playmakers that they currently have outside of Derrick Henry are all on defense. Now, you know, you can make an argument the defense is still pretty good. I mean, that front four and the money that they're spending on the front four, I think is where it needs to be. But offensively, they don't have that. We don't know what Treylon Burks is. He was hurt a majority of last year. He showed flashes. You feel good about it. I think he's going to have a major step up this year, but we don't know until they actually play the games. You don't have quarterback figured out for the future, but you also don't know how. I mean, is this the last year of Derrick Henry? We think maybe. You know, you don't really know what Hassan Haskins is yet. If he can be the bell cow and be your top running back. You obviously need more receivers. You've addressed the offensive line. You haven't fixed it. And so I think the hard part for coaches, and especially a guy that's in the position like Mike Vrabel doesn't want to be in a rebuild because he knows he's probably not going to survive a rebuild. It rarely happens if you're the coach that goes into the rebuild. And so he's not interested in that. And so what they're kind of trying to do, I think, is put Band-Aids on things and hope that they can hold it together and that the defense is good enough and that they can get a little bit more out of Derrick Henry and a little bit more out of Ryan Tannehill and go on some sort of run. And I just don't know if that is realistic. And eventually teams come to the point where they just go, all right, I just have to eat it, and we're just going to have to take a step back. Look at the Predators. The Predators, I think David Poile didn't want to do that for a while, and he finally got to the point where he knew he needed to, and they did it, and it's actually worked out maybe better than they thought they would, at least to this point. But they have 13 draft picks going into this draft and that they can use. And so that's just kind of where I think the Titans are. Rand Carthon is still one that I haven't quite figured out yet of exactly how he thinks. I think he's still trying to figure it out. But to your point, trading up to 3, giving all of those assets up to go get a guy that, you know what, he could be special, but you just don't know. And that's why I wouldn't do it.
So that kind of brings us back to the question that we posed, you know, at the end of last break, was where should the Titans go with that first pick? What should they do with it? And for me, it comes down to one or two options, and I think both of which would come on draft night. I think you look at how the draft is going, and you see who's kind of falling off the board, and let's just pose the question and say that they're not trading up into the top 10. Let's just say that they're kind of waiting, and let's also preface that somebody else goes in and four quarterbacks go within the first 4 picks, which very well could happen in this year's draft. If one of these big-time offensive linemen, like a Paris Johnson Jr. or Peter Skoronski, or one of these guys fall to 11, then I think that has to be your pick. I think you need to go and get a young, big-time offensive lineman prospect. I know Skoronski doesn't have the intangibles to be a left tackle, but regardless, I don't care if he plays guard. I don't care if he plays right tackle. He's going to be a guy that I feel like is just he's a can't-miss prospect that could be on your offensive line in some form or fashion for the next 10 years. So I think if one of those guys were to fall to that position, you take him. But if they don't and some of these quarterbacks drop, then one, you might want to consider taking one of them, or two, you might want to trade back and get future assets and try to go get the best receiver you can, because I don't think anybody in this receiving class is going to go inside the top 10 this year. And that's also a huge position of need for this team.
In a perfect world for me, Junie, I'm trading back. I'm trading back to the 20s, somewhere in there. So I'm going to move back in the first round. That's going to give me an extra day 2 pick or more. To move back like that. And then, you know, who knows, like you could move into the 20s and let's say that you've got your board filled out with receivers that you really, really like, but you know, you can get them day 2. They're going to be in the second and third round. So you don't worry about that. Offensive lineman at that point in the 20s, probably not. And let's say that, you know, Hendon Hooker or Will Levis has fallen to that point. Then, okay. Then I would say, okay, at that point, because I would know that I'd have, you know, maybe 3 or 4 picks in day 2 that I can go get a receiver, maybe a tight end, because that's another position that I think they need to look at is tight end. But I think that would give you the best chance to really look towards the future if you're able to trade out of 11. But like you said, if the guy that you want, if you've identified somebody that you want and they're there, then you take him. That is the bottom line. He's Junie Riddle. He's in for Michelle today on Chase and Michelle. We got another great hour for you. We'll get back into the Predators and the conversation that Barry Trotz had with Jared yesterday. Coming up next, also the Grizzlies will open the playoffs. We'll talk to Eric Hasseltine at 10:30. That is all ahead here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.